Michele, Philip, and Isabel, come up, please, for the next panel. Are any of them here? William Ross, Michele Ciccini, Philip Awadala, Isabel Forche. So our next panel will actually be talking about bridging metrics for better health and economic outcomes. I slipped up on that last one. William Ross, the Director, Bureau of Biostatistics and Computer Applications, Health Products and Food Branch from Health Canada. Michele Ciccini, thank you. Health Economist and Policy Analyst, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development in France. Philip Awadala, Professor, Department of Pediatrics, Faculty of Medicine, Université de Montréal, and the co-director of CAPT AGEN. Okay. And Isabel Forche, who is Director of Research and Development, P3G Observatory in Canada. And we'll begin with William.
Good. Well, thanks for having me here. Just a quick technological piece.
The yep, arrows. Right there.
Okay. I'm going to talk a bit about data complexity today, and I think if many of you have worked in these areas, this could be a very esoteric kind of talk, but I'm not really going to talk about the technical aspects of data complexity, so to speak. I'm going to talk about some of the issues we face as we look more at these integrated problems from the point of view of being part of the problem and the solution. I want to start with a quote that's always attributed to Deming. Deming famously is supposed to have said, "In God we trust, all others must bring data." And I thought it was it's an interesting kind of comment that Deming made here, partly because of the juxtaposition of trust with data, and the fact that Deming himself was a lot more interested in management than he was actually in analysis, although he was a great developer of statistical methods, especially process control methods and their use in managing problems. I think it was important that he focused on data because he also understood that data by itself is not that informative. What's required with data are the data models that generate it, the analytical models that analyze it, some understanding of the variability of the world in which this comes from and the uncertainties in which it goes. In other words, the ability to extrapolate the data to information to the world around us. And that meant, I think, that what Deming understood, and it certainly was reflected in a lot of his work, is that the idea of going from data to some understanding of the world around us is really a very human activity. And what he did not want to see people do is come and tell them what they thought the world was about. He wanted them to bring the data to the table and then for there to be a human process in place that came from data to understanding. I think that this is an important element of data complexity, actually, that we'll see as we go along here, especially with the kinds of models that we're looking at, which are increasingly integrated. through many, many sorts of problems, and we've already seen examples of that this morning. But this has produced a lot of complexity in the data structures themselves, and by this, this might be the more technical piece, the actual putting together of the data, the analyses and their interpretations. And the fact that the more the complexity increases, the more implications there are for the use of models, and the fact that we understand that at the best models are adequate, but they are never true. And on top of that, the final point here is that the models themselves, or the computational models themselves, are no longer adequate. We've gone a long way since we used to use a pencil and a piece of paper. So I want to do this through a couple of anecdotal pieces, and these are just a couple of simple examples. And one of the simplest examples I know about, given my background and training, is really the question of looking at a treatment versus a control. And we all learn about that in the world that we live in. And what I want to look at is a change from the thing that we're studying, from, in this case, the toxicology of a particular chemical, to the movement down to the gene level, which means we've moved a long ways away from the traditional toxicological endpoints into gene expression, and then to use this simple structure of treatment versus control and see what happens when we get into this more complicated situation. This is a particular chemical, this is one of the reasons I'm not a chemist, by the way, is the naming of substances. But this is really a simple experiment with respect to toxicity in the rat and the user rat tissues. And I want to move quickly through this, but just to point out that we're going to look a little bit at the design of the experiment very, very quickly, and a couple of things to notice. One of them is that the experiment itself becomes part of the problem in a way that's much more different than it used to be, and that our simple testing procedures disappear very quickly. We see that for the design of these sorts of things, and I don't want to get into what a two-color system is and all this sort of thing. What I really want to say is that while we have a number of techniques available to us traditionally, one of the things that's happening as we get this level of complexity is the actual collection of the data itself becomes an integral part of the output. So one of the things that happens in microarray analyses is that the study itself becomes a treatment in a way. That is, a great deal of effort is going into trying to find that information that's in all the numbers that you have there. So the fact that we bring the data rather than trust to the table has become a much more complicated thing already. So what we have is this idea of reference within the study, and the reference is really just related to the study itself. And very quickly, here's a picture of that very simple treatment versus control idea. All the information that you are interested in as a scientist is inside those little boxes. Each one of those little boxes contains 20 or 30,000 measurements. And what you're seeing in that top piece is just a little bit of variability between the bits and pieces of your experiment that are really not about the treatment or the control itself. And so the first thing you need to do is a fairly complex operation that is referred to as normalization here, which gets all the boxes to line up. That's the first thing you have to do. And then you need to take a look at the kinds of things that are happening. And without telling you a great deal about this, you'll notice that, and what I want you to understand about this, is that this is a substitute for your t-test now. What we have here is a hierarchical clustering of the data that we have. First of all, to check and see if there are any other issues, and there are, the top one underlines on the right all the things that happen on day one in this experiment, which says that the day itself is clustering the data, and therefore you have a blocking effect. You need to remove that, and then you discover, lo and behold, on the bottom left-hand side, that you have all the high levels on different days clustering together, which suggests to you that perhaps there is a treatment effect in terms of gene expression. And so there we have a very simple example of where we've had to replace a simple t-test or an analysis of variance table with a much more structured approach with a lot more assumptions, a lot more models to get to an endpoint, which is just gene expression. And now we need to ask the question, what does that mean? And that what that means is, well, we don't know. We need now to take that bit of information that's a lot more complicated and put it in an even bigger context to get to the result. So that's the atom in the world of data. That's one experiment. Let's take a look at something more complicated, which is the reduction of sodium in the food supply, which is a question more related to the stuff that we're talking about here. Also relatively simple in proposing the question to be asked, because it really focuses on a very narrow element of a much broader picture, but it's one that we've been working at and we actually have some information on. So there's no single data set, so we have to pull data sets together. It requires a broad base of collaboration. This is not done in a single lab or with a single survey or anything. It has implications for both health and commerce, because you're looking at modifying the food supply. And so you're looking at economic and entrepreneurial issues, along with public health issues and all sorts of data analysis issues. This also includes the fact that we have a certain totality to the data at any one time, and it's limited in what we can really do. And so that requires a much more human element there to get from data to results. So Canada's sodium reduction strategy, which some of you may be involved in, I don't know, but this is a broad collaboration, which has a very simple process to it. There's a statistical modeling of scenarios listed on the left-hand side. There's some draft target setting that goes on, a lot of consultation with industry and stakeholders. So industry is a very important collaborator in this. The other stakeholders tend to be public health people. And then there's the idea of fitting or establishing a final target. And then, given that a final target can be established, we're going to have to follow up and see if these approaches actually have an impact. So what sort of data do we use? Well, we use the CCHS 2.2 Nutrition Survey, which is a national survey. It provides us with an opportunity to guess at baseline intakes of sodium, food sources of sodium, and to inform further data collection. A food label survey, which really looks at product level sodium content. A lab analysis, which informs uncertainties around nutrient content. And that's also, by the way, implied by some questions of trust. You don't just use the label information, you validate the label information with laboratory experiments. So you see this idea of bring the data because you're not God and we're not trusting you. Finally, there is non-government data. Everything so far has been done internally, and there's product-level market share data, and this goes back to AC Nielsen's, for example, which was done. But also there are other analyses, such as the Institute of Medicine's risk assessments to establish AIs that is adequate intakes and upper levels and so on. So you need to pull all that stuff together to get somewhere. And when you do, this is an example of the sort of outputs you get. Here's an example of some modeling that's done that gives you baseline current intakes for the population, which tells you something about the goals that we're looking at by 2016 and what happens to the distribution of intakes and what our final objective is. And that's done within those two vertical lines which come out of the risk assessments themselves. So that tells you that from the analysis that we've done, we have a goal in place and we have some sense of what the current situation is, which is really, in terms of current thinking, a sodium intake which is far too high. We also are able to pull out major food group contributors to sodium, and I always find this interesting because a lot of people think of products with high concentrations of sodium, but it's not the concentration that matters as much as what you eat. And so we can go back to the discussion about bagels earlier this morning and see that if you go and get your two bagels, you'll be doing just what Canadians always do, and that is getting 14% of their sodium from baked products. So we can look at these. There are 17 little pieces to the pie, and I think there are actually 30, but you can't draw the little minuscule pieces. But there's an interesting piece of information that comes out of all this collaboration on what our sources are and where we would look in the food supply to make some changes that depends on our eating habits and the concentration in individual foods. So what is the outcome of all that? Well, what comes from this is a policy that everybody agrees on and tries to implement, and then there is a monitoring and evaluation stage that comes into place. And what happens in this stage? Well, what happens in this stage is that we collect more data. And you can see, and the important thing with respect to this presentation is that as we move along, we are starting to implicate more and more groups within the data collection exercise. So the database upon which this is eventually going to be supported will involve industry, public health, government, and so on, with different kinds of activities, which will now produce a body of evidence which we will make decisions on. But the important element is that as we move forward in these things, because of the kind of problems that we're looking at, the database will expand, the structure of the data will become more complicated, the analysis will be more complicated, and we're into a completely different kind of world that we're working in. I want to make a final comment, and I know I ran through this as quickly as I can, but I'm just looking at this is very, very close. I think I tried for more than 20 minutes when I looked at this before. But the final comment on the analytical complexity. The first is that, of course, I think we all understand that when it comes to data structures and analysis, we are going to have a systems approach to these things. And there's a couple of elements of this that are quite important. The first is the information technology, which is an enabler, and this is both soft and hardware. It provides some analytical capacity. It provides the ability to share data. It provides the ability to have access to the data that could be shared, and it allows one to emphasize some of the communication aspects of this particular human activity, which is coming to understand data. But what it also does is it adds complexity and it adds program risk. So by program risk, I mean that you have here a system in place that as you move along, in and of itself, becomes more complicated and more complex. It's not uncommon for people who work in large institutions who have IT workers with them to understand that those people who are doing things for you, they don't actually understand the system they're working with. And in fact, there may not be anybody in your organization that really understands that system. They can be very, very complicated. They can be very complex. And so there's this additional issue that comes into play with complexity, and that's the information technology itself. The second is what I refer to as social structure of data. It's an enabler for comprehension and knowledge. It's an enabler for problem resolution and creativity. The social structure is really all those groups that are implicated in developing and bringing data together. It's really that human part that takes the data and moves it to analysis and for which we require collaboration. It's not something we do individually. But it adds complexity and also adds program risk. And some of the reasons I put into place here are issues such as privacy, security, the proprietary nature of data, regulatory restrictions. And I like this list a little bit because it brings you back to the initial quote. What are all of these things about? They're all about trust. And it's really one of the key elements that comes into place. In God we trust, the rest of us need data. So we need to address that particular issue about privacy, security, and so on. It's an interesting artifact of some of this is the attempts by various people to set up databases on particular issues. In North America, if you try to set up a database, you will almost always end up with government data from the U.S. And that has all about regulation in it. That's all about regulation and privacy. How many of you will actually go out today, sit down at your computer, and access the Canadian Community Health Survey and take a look at it? I can tell you how many of you will do that. None of you. I have access, and I won't be doing it. How many of you could, if you wanted to, slip out and take a look at Ann Haynes in the U.S.? All of you could. It's about a particular approach to data, the kinds of regulations and issues around privacy and security. How many of you will access, for example, today's transactions at Walmart? None of you will. None of us can. There is enormous amount of data in each of these large companies. You do not have access to that. That's proprietary information. And yet we understand that all of us together have a part to play in providing information and sharing it. And it's interesting, as a final comment, I know I'm a bit over, sorry, that when you look in the technical area that I work at, in which is really shared computation with perhaps competitors or even more hostile arrangements, that the first thing that comes up in the systems that you work with where you're sharing computations rather than data is this idea of trust. These systems always have some conceptual piece of trust in it, and I'll just leave you with that.
Thank you.